Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
This is the Game Football Podcast from The Times on a simply massive morning. The European Super League becomes reality, but what are the implications? Is it actually going to happen, or is it a massive negotiating ploy? We'll dive into the details with all the latest reaction and react to the big news coming out that Jose Mourinho has been sacked by Tottenham Hotspur. Wow. Also, the quadruple is over for Manchester City. We'll review the FA Cup semi-finals. All of that and more on today's bumper episode of the Game Podcast. To help me through it all, Gregor Robertson, Alison Rudd, Matt Dickinson, and we're joined by The Times' chief sports writer and the man who exclusively broke the story of the European Super League, Martin Ziegler. How you doing, guys?
Very well, yeah, I think.
So let me summarise where we are with the European Super League. Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, Spurs and Manchester City, and United as well, have all agreed to join a new European Super League alongside the Italians AC Milan, Juventus and Inter Milan, and Barcelona, Atletico Madrid and Real Madrid of Spain. From what we know, the European Super League would be a new midweek competition. Those involved want to continue playing in their domestic leagues as well. And that has left the Premier League and UEFA to come out publicly and say players would be banned from their competitions and that clubs would be banned from the Premier League as well. Juventus president Andrea Agnelli has stood down as chair of the European Clubs Association, having previously stated he wouldn't contemplate this move. FIFA has expressed its disapproval. They've called for more dialogue. So much going on. The European Super League has sent a letter to FIFA and UEFA saying it has already filed a motion before the relevant courts to ensure it can be established without punitive measures. The bank JP Morgan have confirmed they will be financing it. You can read more on this currently developing story at The Times right now. Just subscribe to The Times and Sunday Times if you haven't already. But we'll delve into the details that we know at this stage. Martin, with you in particular, as it's your exclusive story. Tell us how this all emerged and who exactly is responsible.
I got a tip off Sunday morning, late morning. Last day of my holiday, preparing to put my feet up, and I realised actually this is going to be quite a big deal if I could get it stood up. So took about an hour for me to get it confirmed by another source. Initially, I got it confirmed that six big six English clubs had signed up, but Manchester City hadn't so far. And then about an hour later, it was confirmed they had as well. So, yeah, it was, and then I wasn't quite expecting it to reach the stage where you had the Prime Minister of Great Britain and the President of France were intervening on the story, but nevertheless, yeah, it's quite some day.
How realistic is it? There's a lot of timing involved here. UEFA are set to make a decision on their new 36-team format in the Champions League today. So it's not really a coincidence, is it? Is it playing games a little bit with FIFA and UEFA?
I think it's gone beyond that, actually. I mean, there's been, you know, for the last 25 years, Super League threats have come and gone. But we haven't seen anything like this before. We haven't seen an investment bank putting 4 billion euros behind a project. We haven't seen the clubs actually going out and stating they are joining the Super League. This has gone to a completely new level. It's a real possibility. what UEFA do, what FIFA do now. I actually think what's going to happen first is this is all going to end up in the courts, and that's where things are going to be decided.
There's a part of me that wants to play devil's advocate today, I've got to say, because I look at football as a business. It has been for a long, long time. There's been a lot of money involved. And strangely, I've always wondered who has the divine right to run competitions. Now, we know the rules state, of course, that if you sign up to any competition aside from the Champions League and four other competitions, you'll be kicked out of the Premier League effectively. But then who gave the Premier League the defined right to basically tell these clubs that you've got to be in our competition and you can't be in anyone else's, especially given the billions of pounds that have been invested to own the clubs? Does this leave the Premier League really at its biggest test, the biggest test that English football has ever faced?
Yeah, probably. It probably is. You're quite right. No one can tell the club in which competition they should play. But I think the issue here is that they want to have their cake and eat it. They want to be in the Super League and play in the Premier League. Because actually, I don't think any of the English clubs would countenance a move where they didn't play in the Premier League, because they would be cutting off their nose to spite their face, and think of all the money they'd be losing from that. So they want everything. Of course they do, and I think that's the issue. It's not the fact that the football authorities are saying you must play in our leagues. They're just saying if you want to play in our leagues, then you can't play in this one as well.
Also, did the Premier League not draft their own rules? And is the Premier League not still a members club?
Well, it is a members club, but it is also, it's part, part of it is it's the FA Premier League officially. So the Football Association, it still has a veto over everything in the Premier League. It's still part of English football. It's not just a members club.
I just wondered what Andrea Agnelli of Juventus had to play in all of this. Ed Woodward of Manchester United stepping down as well. Which clubs, I think fans will be interested in which clubs were driving this.
So very much the four main clubs were Real Madrid, Manchester United, AC Milan, and Juventus. Now, you're right, Andrea Agnelli played a very significant role in this. He basically led UEFA down the garden path. He told them he was happy to accept the new Champions League format because he's president of the European Clubs Association, or he was until last night. That he was happy with everything, the Super League wasn't going to happen, and suddenly on Saturday night, UEFA trying to contact him to agree a joint statement of intent over the new look Champions League, and he disappeared off the radar. Nobody could get hold of him. None of the other ECA board members could get hold of him, and then they suddenly realised what had happened. And so it is no surprise when the official Super League statement came out, there he was, vice chairman of the new Super League, Andrea Agnelli.
Fans will be disappointed, massively disappointed in those major clubs. I've seen fans talking about the desire to support other teams now. It seems realistic, but it also seems a fantasy because of exactly what you've pointed out, Martin, the idea that clubs will walk away from their domestic competitions. What is the reaction going to be like from the Premier League? I think we've had words from them already about possible sanctions and punishments. We've seen the likes of Gary Neville, Jamie Carragher, Rio Ferdinand saying deduct points, ban them from next season in the Premier League. In fact, take away their prize money for this season as well. Are we going to see anything as strong as that?
I'm not sure. I mean, to me, actually, I think a more serious challenge in a way for all these clubs, and especially the English ones, is the reaction of their fans. Their fans, as far as I can tell, to a person, absolutely hate this. All the official supporters clubs have responded very strongly condemning it. If you look at the replies to the Twitter announcements, the fury from the supporters is incandescent. So I actually think that might be the thing they have misjudged the greatest in this.
Maybe they need to explain some of what has happened in their relationship with UEFA and FIFA over the years then, because the statements that have come out over the last 24 hours basically paint UEFA as a middleman, an unnecessary middleman in terms of selling rights. I think FIFA had made $6.44 billion US in revenue in the last year, despite the pandemic. Most of that selling rights for various things, computer games, etc., all using the names, faces of players and clubs as well. And the clubs might turn around rightly and say, hold on a minute, not only have FIFA and UEFA been found guilty of corruption over the years, not too distant past, but also, of course, we could sell all of these rights ourselves and make so much more money. Yes, of course, that underlines the point that it's about greed, but from a business point of view, it makes sense.
Well, of course, that's what the clubs are going to be claiming. I mean, FIFA and UEFA, they make the revenues they make, they're not-for-profit organisations. So everything they make is basically given back into world or European football. It might be payments to national associations or solidarity payments to smaller clubs, whatever. So I think what the clubs are saying is, you know, we don't want you to have that money to pass on to the rest of the football pyramid. We want that money and then we'll decide what we do with it.
Matt, what do you think?
Oh, well, first of all, well done to Martin for, yeah, I mean, that's one of the biggest scoops that anyone, any journalist would hope for in any year. So, you know, he's as well connected in these fields as anyone and has proven it again. That said, let's hope it's a story that turns out to be trampled on, and that's putting it politely, crushed to death. But I have to say, I fear, I mean, I went to bed feeling angry and woke up feeling worried. I think that's the best way to sum up my sort of moods of the last 24 hours. You know, went to bed angry for the reasons that so many of us are angry, just thinking it's just not how competition is run. It's not how certainly football competition is run, that you know go off and make your own competition and can't be thrown out, you know, you can't be demoted from it just because. And I've woken up worried because of this nagging fear that again, I have to choose my, trying to stop swearing, that these owners think they can get away with it and might just get away with it. I mean, the very least I think they're expecting to get out of this, the very, very least, is that UEFA will basically cave and give them the you know, control of broadcast revenues. So it's a sort of Super League by any other, by whatever means, you know, they get about. This is what they've threatened for the last 25 years. As Martin says, this is certainly the most biggest escalation of that threat. But yeah, Martin points out, and, you know, I think we've all seen social media goes nuts, but we always have this idea that the world is on Twitter. The world is not on Twitter. You know, that's a portion of the world. And, you know, it's a pretty small portion. And it's also not, you know, every Man United fan across the globe. It's not every potential TV set of eyeballs. And that is where I get worried. You know, the official fans groups are coming out rightly, as are thousands upon thousands of fans, you know, and we see that rage and we hear it because it's on Twitter. But that is different from the world and the potential of the world. And that's what these owners are seem to be banking on. So, you know, that's where the worry bit comes in, that I certainly think, you know, four or five, six of these owners actually do think they could get away with this.
You're not a Tottenham fan, are you?
No, I'm a fan another Super League giant who managed to scrape a 1-1 draw with Fulham yesterday.
So how are your feelings about it as a fan? Because we speak about the fans in a very much, you know, distant role, but we're football fans, of course. Just finally on this, how are you feeling?
Although I'm a fan of the football club, I'm not a fan of the owners, and I'm not a fan of the powers that be in this club. So I have absolutely no allegiance to them. So I just think it's a sort of a betrayal of what football should be all about.
Martin Ziegler, brilliant story. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us on the Game Podcast. I really appreciate it.
I do feel behind the scenes that I think lawyers have been hard at work for everybody involved, because I think on the face of it, this new Super League sounds like a cartel, and most European law would be anti-cartel. But the fact they've put out a statement sort of preempting, sort of trying to make out they're the victims, that you can't stop them doing what they want to do, really smacks to me that they've sought a lot of legal advice, which has said, no, it's fine. You know, you can do this. I've there is precedent that you can't tell a individual sports person that they will be denied the ability to represent their nation if they join a certain party. That there is precedent that that's illegal. I suspect these grasping owners have spent quite a lot of dosh on legal advice, and they're ready for what I imagine will be quite old-fashioned legal riposts to what they're proposing.
The Premier League's kind of trump card is still the ability to expel these clubs. And Project Big Picture's underlying sort of purpose was to get rid of the one club, one vote system in the Premier League. And the fact that that still remains means that the power is surely still in the Premier League's hands. And and that's the kind of where this battle line is drawn. Like my impression was always that when so much money poured into overseas, foreign money poured into English football, the fear, biggest fear, was that one day an owner might walk away. But like, I don't think anyone expected that they would take the football clubs with them. And like, you know, because that's what's being threatened. If you're willing to risk expulsion from the domestic competition and to completely ignore the tradition, the history, the native fan base, then it's like theft. But you know, essentially is the biggest threat here. So the most chilling thing I've read was the fact that they are taken to calling match-going fans legacy supporters, which means that there is a new kind of future of fandom, and it's global.
Well, there already is that future.
There is, but we can't ignore the legacy fans.
I know, but three years ago, I trotted around Premier League grounds working out who was getting tickets, and it was people on, you know, super deluxe packages coming over with the family. Half the family would go and see a play on the West End, and the others would do the Premier League experience. And they were welcome because they spent a lot of money in the club shop. And they'd have spent more than the legacy fan who lives around the corner and doesn't need to buy something in the club shop every Saturday or Monday night. I think we were close to reaching the tipping point where there were too many people buying tickets to go into a Premier League ground to watch fans as much as the football, with their selfie sticks and the recorders, and sending, you know, stuff on social media to their mates, look where I am. So eventually, if you have too many of those and too few legacy fans in the stadium, it was already becoming something that isn't what we dream football is. I mean, we're already losing that sense that each stadium is jam-packed with people who are legacy fans.
I agree, and that's my point, and that's my worry. I mean, that is why it has turned from anger to worry, because that's their gamble, is that, you know, there are enough of, you know, across the globe, there is enough interest in, you know, Manchester United versus Barcelona six times a season from eyeballs anywhere and everywhere. And I think, you know, I don't suppose they've got, you know, everyone's a potential customer, but, you know, there is not the need for, you know, I mean, obviously for hardcore anymore. They've got enough customers. They think that they can keep going. They're punt. They're almost, you know, I wrote in it this morning, you know, they're daring you to turn off. They're daring you to say, oh, you know what? I'm going to boycott Barcelona v Man United. I'm going to boycott Lionel Messi. You know, I care to, you know, that's the dare, and that's the bluff that they're calling on you. And it's, you know, it's, you know, and we've seen a lot of people are saying that. You know, I spoke to a few mates this morning. It's like, you know, I'm ashamed of my club. My club's a disgrace. You know, I never thought Man United would do this. I never thought Arsenal would do this. But, you know, it's a big call to then say, I'm going to boycott this. I'm going to walk away. And who wants to be in that position? And that's, you know, and then just on Gregor's point about throwing them out of the league, I mean, that's another fascination. You suddenly sort of think that through and you think, yeah, that is the big card that the Premier League have to play. But, you know, I know this is sort of, you know, just trying to think it through. What if these six clubs then try and cherry pick 10 other clubs and just say, look, you're desperate enough for the money. We can shout you into a new standalone domestic league, you know, come and join us. Here's 200 million to joining fee. Here's a guarantee of this income. Obviously they need to find the TV companies that will pay for that, but who knows, with direct streaming or whatever, you know, this is the ramifications. The more you think through, the more worrying, troubling, you know, appalling the whole thing gets.
Okay, Matt, you referenced your column in The Game today on Monday, and it's very good, and you really sort of stick the hot poker in it. But if it happens, you are not going to boycott it, are you, Matt? You are going to report on it for the Times. Everybody in today's papers will still go.
I don't know. I think that's a question we should be asking each other now, all of us. I think we should be saying, is this something that we should take any part in?
It's all good if you used to be a footballer, Gregor. I've got bills to pay, mate.
Yeah, no, I know that. That's the thing. You've got these clubs are supposed to be such a big draw, but actually, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if the Times boycott them. It doesn't matter if, you know, every other English newspaper does, or, you know, the traditional media. New media will form. New media is already formed, and it will report on it, and it will be pored over because these clubs are such big draws. It is disgusting, but for me, still the trump card has to be, I have to have some faith that the other 14 clubs have the morals to say no if they were asked to come, because possibly they don't have the same global appeal. That would be an even bigger risk, and they would be alienating the local fans. You know, I'm not sure you can pick another 10 clubs, Matt, that would be big enough and strong enough to do that. So I think the most important thing, the key thing now, is that they call their bluff. They say, if you go, you're out.
Let's also sort of just think on that, you know, I think it has to be, you know, that has to be live discussions as we speak. But again, also, you know, and this is where it gets so soul destroying, because then you're thinking, okay, right, so what's funding the Premier League as it is? It's the TV revenue, which is massively distorted by you know, if you put a terrible Man U game on, that gets more viewers than a brilliant Burnley game. That's the reality as it stands. And again, it makes you sick to the stomach that the leverage they have by ownership of these clubs that have built up this, you know, extraordinary following and extraordinary heritage and history is a pretty scary leverage. That's, you know, and I'm with you in the sense of, you know, we want to call their bluff. We want to say, you dare do this. This is how we're going to retaliate. But the stakes are big, scarily big here.
My gut feeling is that they would roll back then. I don't think they could risk alienating an entire fan base and essentially taking a club from its country. I don't think they could do it. So it's important they call their bluff in the first place.
But here's the thing. If they want to set up their own Super Premier League, if you like, there's six of them already in, and they extend that offer to the other 14 Premier League clubs. Now imagine even seven of the 14, half of them say, okay, you're going to give us, instead of £100 million a year that we get in the Premier League, we're going to get £250 million a year from the new Premier League. For a lot of owners, that's worth it. And once the other five go, well, then all of a sudden you've got more than half of the current Premier League going to the new Premier League. And if they don't get the remainder of the clubs from inside the current Premier League, they can get them from inside the EFL. They might get Rangers and Celtic. Who knows? But they can get them. You know, as soon as that product becomes so much more financially viable, how can you run a business and turn it down? And that's the reality for a lot of the owners in football.
The answer is because you're putting the power for all future revenues into the hands, like Project Big Picture, of a small elite. So if you think you're getting dangled a carrot of bigger revenues now to come and join us, they can change that in the future. That's the same as Project Big Picture.
There are a lot of clubs for whom the Champions League is a distant dream that will probably never materialise. So what for them, it's like, well, we'll take the 250 million quid. For the owners, many of the owners, particularly in the EFL, might have bought those clubs thinking we'll get to the Premier League and we'll sell the club anyway. So for them, it's short term. They don't care about being in the Champions League. They care about their club, which is currently worth £50 million, being worth £500 million in 10 years' time, and them making a huge amount of money on the product they bought.
So let's talk about why this is, and it's who owns the football clubs. That's really the, you know.
Well, yeah,
fact is, who owns the clubs is we've had the coming together of a group of owners who are as divorced and distant from you know, any sense of, you know, collective as we've ever seen. That's just the fact, isn't it? It's been the coming together, you know, Glazers, Fenway, it is completely about exploitation. Then I think, as I've written this morning, that's allied with desperation from certain clubs. The fact is that Real Madrid are at huge financial challenges, debts. Italy, there's a sense of fear of missing out of, you know, the Premier League. You know, there's a few, income has soared and they're trying to make sure that they're not in any kind of, you know, discrepancy there. So there's a few, you know, I think there's a written greed, fear, envy. You know, these they're pretty unpleasant, but they're also powerful forces, and you know, they're no way to shape the modern game, but those are the driving emotions behind this.
Also, I think one of a particularly distasteful element to this is I can't help but feel that the pandemic has made them feel it's possible, because empty stadiums hasn't stopped football being something that everyone wants. You know, it's wall-to-wall coverage, fake fan noise. No one likes it, but it's worked. The money's still coming in. The broadcasters, you know, still regard it as a very valuable product. I'm sure they're thinking, we can cut through all the pain and angst and, oh my God, I can't believe my club are doing this. They can cut through that because of the bigger marketing possibilities. And they know that they're there because we've had a pandemic. So it's a really terrible thing to think that these people are sort of benefiting from something that's been so tragic.
And also, I think it was a Swiss Ramble. You said that you highlighted that the 12 clubs are 7.4 billion in debt, and half of that is borrowings from banks. It's not borrowing from the owners. So, you know, the pandemic has made that worse. But they're also running at extraordinary losses, and that really is why they think we need to vastly swell our revenues here to cover these losses. Another thing that kind of took my eye was that there'd be a 55% cap on salaries and transfers. So, you know, all we could talk about how the Premier League has blown up in its size and its might, but fundamentally, the money has usually found its way to the stars of the show, who are the players. That would no longer be the case. The money would be going in the back pockets of these owners, and you know, that makes it even more distasteful.
And the investment banks that are underwriting it, et cetera, et cetera. So
I'm not sure how distasteful that is. I mean, most companies don't give out that much money to their staff, do they?
Is that a good thing? You know, is it good to exploit workers, which is essentially what most capitalist businesses do?
Let's be realistic.
I'm not saying that footballers are exploited. They're clearly not exploited. But it's an entertainment industry. They are the people who should be making the money. And if otherwise, it should be reinvested into the club to, you know, an infrastructure and, you know, they should help the communities in which they're based. But we're getting back to the whole idea that this is now a globalised sport and these things are completely, you know, distant to these owners now.
You raise a very good point there, Greg. And maybe the players will have their own breakaway league and we'll get their announcement later on in the league that they want control of revenues.
On that, I would say Charlie Austin's been the most outspoken I can see so far. clearly, he's ruling Queen's Park Rangers out of joining one of any additional invites.
I don't know, QPR's a London club, you know, they're going to be very profitable if they join the European Super League, especially no, but that's,
I mean, you know, if we're going to completely you know, sort of batty about it, but that you know, that's exactly a club, you know, you would like to think a club where you're giving money to for your season ticket, you'd like to think, oh yeah, this is a club that is rooted in the community and you know, would do the honourable thing. But really, you know, you suddenly get an invite out of the blue to join some league and pay off your debts, and here's, say, 200 million quid here and whatever. It's the sense, I say, I'd come back to the point of the sort of fear. It's the sense that there are huge forces here that we do not have control. You know, I've read quite a few places that, you know, the fans are in control. They are only if they vote in their tens of millions together, and you try and harness that together is a very, very complex, difficult thing. And that's as customers, we do have, should have control. But I think there is actually, I think the rage against this is partly fueled by a sense of impotence. To be honest, that's the scary bit about it for me.
I still think there's a possibility down the track as well that clubs in the EFL, if not the EFL as an entirety, if they are offered huge sums of money, given the problems that they are in because of the pandemic, might find it extremely difficult to say no as well. And there could be a huge sea change in terms of whether the Premier League as we know it exists.
Well, look at Project Big Picture. I mean, that was completely, you know, that was the, they were buying off the EFL clubs, weren't they? That was, you know, here, take some money and vote, you know, allow us to run the game for eternity. I mean, that was the whole play there. So yeah, everyone, I mean, that showed the EFL is sort of buyable, basically.
What do we do with these clubs now? I know the Premier League, La Liga as well this morning, coming out totally against this and their clubs that have been involved. Should there be points deducted? Should there be financial sanctions? Should they be kicked out of the Premier League for a year, maybe sent to the EFL? Who knows? Because of just the letter of intent, the way that they've gone for this, so many people have been left with a bad taste. I don't know. I really don't know on this one. Alison, what do you think?
You've got to think, what would hurt them? And I don't think, because we're talking about, I mean, you know, this morning, okay, Matt woke up feeling worried. I woke up thinking, oh my, what the? Because on the front of the game, we've got three men in suits. Three men in suits, three owners on the front of the game. And you think, oh my word, this is not good. How do you hurt them without hurting the people who have grown up, many of whom football is everything? You know, it's their community. It's what allows them to get on with their family. It's their life. It's what they live for almost. How do you hurt the owners without hurting them? I mean, if you say you to say, right, we're stripping away all the titles you've won, they're not going to count. Well, that's not going to hurt a man in a suit. It's going to really hurt the fan who spent a lot of money following the team around the country to watch them do that. Probably the only thing that would hurt them would be, as I mentioned earlier, getting a better lawyer than they've got to prove that what they're doing is illegal and they simply cannot do it. I have a very strong suspicion that the FA, the Premier League, have taken their eye off the ball of this legally. I'm more worried about the breakaway people thinking they've got the legal ace up their sleeve, because they're saying things I didn't think was possible to say, that their rights are being infringed if you stop them doing what they want to do. And that makes me think that there is nothing you can do. If they win the legal battle, there is nothing you can do except do things that sound great, like ban them or take points off them. The people in the suits on the front of the game this morning won't care about the past. They will only care about the money coming in the future.
For them to actually dislocate these football clubs from their domestic league, I still don't think they have the balls to do it. So that has to be the trump card. That has to be the line in the sand. I actually care less about them setting up the competition in Europe, expanding the Champions League. It's going to happen anyway. We've seen it, you know. Again, this is another side issue. It makes the reforms that we were expecting look like a sweet-smelling bed of roses when they were, you know, stinking as well. So, you know, I care less about that. But what they do in Europe skews the Premier League further. It makes them revenues vast, and it distorts any remaining semblance of competition in the domestic league. So, for me, the trump card is the most important thing is, how do you protect the domestic league? And the only way you can protect it is by calling their bluff and saying, the only way you can go off and do this is if you are no longer a member of the Premier League.
Calling their bluff with the Super League is one thing. Calling their bluff with stopping them getting anything out of this is another entirely. And obviously, you know, we're looking to UEFA to see what compromise, you know, there's obviously a lot of big talk going on about you can't do this and you can't do that, and our lawyers are looking at this, etc. But, you know, to say historically, I mean, I think this Martin Ziegler was right. This has escalated beyond any threatened breakaway I've seen in 25 years. The first one I remember was Media Partners in 98. But historically, you know, they threaten to break away and then they gain, you know, instead of one Champions League European Cup place, it's four Champions League places. Instead of 10% of the pie, it's 50% of the pie, etc. And the very least that they want from this is less sharing of revenues in the new model Champions League and a bigger cup for them. And I suspect that's the very least they probably will get away with. And in itself, that takes us another stage further to more imbalance and so on.
You can't kick them out of the Premier League. Can you? I mean, if you run the Premier League and you kick them out, what happens to your product? The broadcasters turn around and say, hold on a minute, we paid you 5 billion quid because we were expecting superstars and you haven't got them anymore. You know, and fans say, well, I was happy to pay whatever it is, 50 quid a month to watch it when there were superstars involved. But now you haven't got the biggest clubs. So it completely changes their business model if they get rid of those clubs.
As I say again, I don't think they will leave. And also, it's not just the Premier League clubs leaving. You need clubs in Spain, Italy and England all to agree at the same time to leave their domestic leagues. That's not going to happen. These clubs are not going to do that. So you've got to make that the line in the sand. That's the biggest trump card that the Premier League have. And as I say, you know, whatever the legalistic kind of future with over the battles of whether they can or cannot set up a new Super League in Europe, the Premier League is still governed by one club, one vote, and that ultimately gives the other 14 clubs the power.
Yeah, maybe. I believe that they could get together 25 clubs, 30 clubs, to say that if they got kicked out of La Liga, Serie A, the Premier League, while discussions were ongoing, while court cases were ongoing for one season or two, they could manage that. And the Portos of this world might come with them, you know, and maybe some more teams in Spain lower down, maybe some teams in Italy lower down, certainly Germany. What are RB Leipzig going to do? Let's be honest. What did Red Bull get into it for? You know, like, there are clubs out there who will help them put out some sort of a product while this gets turned around in court. And then, you know, after two or three seasons, they all might return to their respective domestic leagues, and whatever it takes, basically, is what could happen. Look, during the course of this conversation, I think I've been more convinced, basically, that it could happen than I was when we started.
I'm just glad I don't support Liverpool or Man United. Anyone on this call?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
ready to turn their back on their club.
Well, thankfully, I grew up near Queen's Park Rangers, Matt. So this morning, I got my QPR shirts out and put them pride of place instead of the Man United ones. Let's just call it that.
Matt, that is a really interesting point, because throughout my life, I've always had a sort of, I don't know what you'd call it, slight embarrassment at how wonderful my club was, and it used to win more than it would lose. And I would think, wonder what it's like to be constantly supporting a team that barely does anything glamorous. And the thing that made me feel okay about supporting Liverpool when they were facing lower opposition was, at least my club have integrity, and I'm not just supporting a big team against a small team, I'm supporting a team that's worthy of my love, and I could fall out of love with it. Yes, you're right.
I've got the split, Lord. I'm off to see Orient versus Cambridge United tomorrow, so come and join me there. Real football.
The big one's going to be in a couple of months' time, when all these EFL clubs that people were so passionate about and saying, at least we don't support Man United or Liverpool and clubs like that, suddenly sign up to the European Super League. That's going to be the real test, isn't it? You know, what are the fans of Forest Green Rovers going to think about it?
We've not even mentioned that. How on earth have Spurs and Arsenal even been involved in this conversation? How, you know, on what basis are they deserving of a place in the European Super League? Nottingham Forest is the club that everyone highlights with a kind of a richer history than many clubs in England, and they certainly have a richer history than Spurs. So, you know, maybe your idea about them dipping into the EFL to recruit some more clubs isn't so ludicrous after all.
Does anyone feel like they know what's going to happen next?
When I first saw it yesterday, digesting it for the first few hours, I thought, here we go again. You know, this is the replay of a familiar script, which ends up with the compromise with the big clubs, as usual, getting, you know, more, never satisfied, but still getting more. The escalation of this is the troubling bit. And I do think, from what I understand of four or five, say at least probably four or five, maybe more of this 12, that these owners are, whatever you're going to call it, ruthless enough, cynical enough, contemptuous enough of the game's traditions, that they seriously think they can, you know, pull this off, or something, a version of it, pull it off, and certainly risk all the hatred that's going to come their way. I think that's bouncing off them. I think, you know, you're a Glazer in America, you've been through that hatred before, and I think they're pretty contemptuous of it. The escalation of it, I think, is definitely to the scariest level, certainly in my time watching any of these play out.
There's a huge story for us to discuss next, as Jose Mourinho blows his chances of winning a trophy with Spurs, and Pep Guardiola blows his chances of winning the quadruple. But remember, if you're enjoying the game podcast, you can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast from. You can also subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times right now across all of your devices. You'll get 1 month free if you sign up today as well. Just go online, search thetimes.co.uk/the game to get started.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Massive news today. As we started this podcast, in fact, during the time that we were talking to Martin Ziegler a little bit earlier on, it was announced by Tottenham Hotspur that Jose Mourinho, their manager, has been relieved of his duties. He's been sacked along with his coaching staff, João Sacramento, Nuno Santos, Carlos Lalin and Giovanni Serra. The chairman, Daniel Levy, said Jose and his coaching staff has been with us through some of our most challenging times as a club. Jose is a true professional who showed enormous resilience during the pandemic. On a personal level, I've enjoyed working with him and regret that things have not worked out as we both envisaged. He will always be welcome here, and we should like to thank him and his coaching staff for their contribution. Their former midfielder, Ryan Mason, will take first team training today. Spurs say a further update will follow in due course. Now, you remember in their last match, Tottenham Hotspur drew 2-2 away from home against Newcastle United. Now, that left them 2 points off the top four. I mean, it's, you know, not looking that bad. Of course, other teams played after them as their match was on Friday night, but it didn't look terrible for Tottenham Hotspur at that point in time, although the results of late haven't been the best. Alisson, Jose being sacked, this is like him being at Spurs for me was already an indication that he was no longer the man for a big club. But the fact that it hasn't worked out for him there so soon is very surprising.
Or is it? I mean, it's been grating along rather unedifyingly for quite some time. I mean, how many times have we listened to managers when they say there's nothing more they can do, or, you know, the players aren't up for it. They're out of there, aren't they? And as soon as Jose said, you know, I'm the same brilliant manager as the players, what do you do with him? You either keep him and give him billions of quid to overhaul the team. That's not going to happen. Daniel Levy's not going to do that. You just think, no, I thought you were a magician, Jose, and I thought you could actually do something with a team that were on the cusp of greatness, Champions League finalists. You think, yeah, you're the magic pill that we need. And instead of doing that, he's created this entity, Spurs, where they're now famous for dropping points and winning positions. Nobody wants to be the chairman of a club that does that, paying a manager a lot of money to do that. It was an experiment that went wrong, and there is no real strong evidence, I suspect, from Levy's point of view, that keeping him in situ for the Carabao Cup final was going to work out. There must be bad feeling at the training ground. He must know that the players just aren't buying into it, which could lead to quite an embarrassing outcome at Wembley. So he's done something rather drastic and said, right, we're cutting it now, we're stopping it now, because it hasn't worked.
Only one win in their last six for Tottenham Hotspur included being dumped unceremoniously out of the Europa League, giving away a 2-0 first leg lead, beaten 3-0 on the night by Dinamo Zagreb. But of course, it's a massive week for them. They play Southampton in the Premier League, but then of the game you mentioned, the EFL Cup final, and the chance of a first trophy since 2012. So Matt, why now? Why has Daniel Levy done it at this point?
Well, good day to bury. I was going to say bury news, but you might say that some, you know, maybe it's a way to try and win back some Spurs fans. Maybe Levy thinks so. You know, but I think basically this decision will be a ruthless, cold calculation that Spurs on this trajectory are going to miss out on certainly top four, potentially Europe completely, and there'll be a punt, that there'll be some kind of bounce. That bounce might you know, get them up the league. That bounce might bring them a trophy on Sunday. I assume he must have spoken to, say, we're only just digesting it now, but I'm sure there'd have been conversations around the training ground, taking the feel of certain players. And yeah, that there is no other reason to do this other than to try and protect, to try and improve your league position, and believe that a team without Jose Mourinho has got more chance of what basically is looking a bit of a desperate scramble. Even if say West Ham do stutter, Chelsea and Liverpool above them, Tottenham are struggling to get up in anywhere near the top four.
Gregor, is it a good decision?
You could question the timing, but I think ultimately, I mean, I don't know if we kind of struck by the shock of the news in the last 24 hours. I have to say that it was one of the most shocking moments I can remember, when that kind of hour passed between Pochettino getting the sack and it being announced. It sort of slowly emerging that the man to replace him was going to be Jose Mourinho. It was so bizarre, and it was such an odd fit, I thought. Some of the things he's saying are true, that he's not working with the same caliber of players that he has been in the past. James Gearbrand wrote a really interesting piece on Saturday, actually, comparing, it's not just about the football, it's not the style of play. You know, everybody's talking about the way he sets his team up is not a way that players are getting behind. It's not a way that's going to win. It's not a way that's going to challenge for titles. And you look at Antonio Conte with Inter Milan just now, he's playing pretty kind of reactionary, attritional at times football, and he's going to win Serie A. And the difference is, the players are following Antonio Conte. Jose, in my view, has lost something. He's lost a spark. And there might be, you know, professional footballers have changed a little bit over the last 20 years as well. But he has undoubtedly lost a little bit of a spark. And the players are not following him the way they once did. So ultimately, yes, it's the right decision, in my view.
Yeah, I mean, we spoke recently about him throwing players under the bus. I mean, it's not something he can currently do with the quality of player he has at Tottenham Hotspur. But you wonder whether anyone else could really have done more. I mean, there are times where they could have played better football. There are, of course, a lot of leads that they've given away. But they just don't have the quality that other teams do. And the fact that they're not that far behind in the Premier League top four race, I think, is really intriguing. I mean, at this point, after the results of the weekend, they're seventh, they're 5 points off the top four. There is still a chance that they could finish in the top four if whoever comes in now gives them a bit of a lift. And maybe that's why this decision has been made, Alison.
I disagree with you. I think there's a lot of talent at Spurs, and the defence is a bit naff. But I think a good manager organises the defence. Other than in defence, I think there's promise in midfield. Højbjerg, I think, is a player that's progressed really well under Mourinho. And as I've said before on the podcast, if you could sell off Son and Kane as a duo, any club in the world would think, yeah, I'll have that. Thank you very much. There's a lot to work with there. I think the feeling is that rather than just getting an extra edge by having a manager of the caliber of Mourinho there, the opposite has happened. It's like it's taken an edge off. It's not. There isn't that sense of progress at all. And if you feel you're stultifying, stagnating, it's not progressing. I genuinely feel, I know they're going up and down through the league position this season, but the overall picture is one of, I don't feel they're getting to have a better identity or working harder or finding a rhythm. Then the fact they are still close enough, and it's a crazy season and anything can still happen because it is a remarkably peculiar season, that just maybe that boost of bringing somebody in would just be enough to clinch a Champions League spot. But then what is a Champions League spot? It's meaningless now. So I don't know. I don't know what it all means.
Gregor, was this about keeping Harry Kane, do you think? Or possibly that Jose Mourinho was asking for a lot of money to spend in the summer, and maybe Tottenham, with everything that's been going on, can't keep up with that. Unless, of course, some sort of European Super League comes out of the blue.
I don't think it can be about replacing Harry Kane, because I would say actually the amount that's going to unsettle Spurs would probably throw his future into even more doubt right now. You're looking at an even bigger project, a bigger overhaul, and as you say, whether you want Jose Mourinho to be the guy who's going to undertake that as well is another question, because at Manchester United, he, as you know, he tried to sign lots of players who were kind of approaching 30. He wants big, experienced players. He doesn't really look to the future in any great, to any great degree, which is going against what really brought Spurs to this level, actually, in the first place, and the fact that they had a kind of broader vision and they signed young players to, that they developed and sometimes sold on. So, yeah, it could be all of these things, but ultimately I think probably it's results and the atmosphere. And I think those two things have really done for him in the end.
I can't really pluck out a name that I think could replace Jose Mourinho right now at Tottenham Hotspur. I mean, of course, there's plenty of managers around who would do a good job, but who would go into Tottenham right now, how everything is? Julian Nagelsmann, of course, has been mentioned for a while for the work that he's done at RB Leipzig. I don't know, Matt, who else?
Yeah, I think Nagelsmann will be very, very high on any list, particularly if you look into sort of young manager who might hang around for a few years. I mean, if you're looking domestically, whether Brendan Rodgers wants to jump down from third to seventh in the league, as things stand, but obviously, you know, the fact is that budgets are different at Tottenham than the Leicester, but he was approached before, came pretty close to going to Spurs and then ended up at Liverpool instead that time. They have sort of negotiated in the past, but I'd have thought Rodgers would be pretty high on, you know, certainly looking at domestic markets. So yeah, I'd have thought him, stroke Nagelsmann is, I'd be amazed if they aren't two on a pretty short list.
All right, that brings us, I think, to our final point. Let's discuss the FA Cup semi-finals at the weekend. Leicester versus Chelsea will be the final. As we've just mentioned Brendan Rodgers, we might as well start with Leicester. They beat Southampton by 1-0. Wasn't a classic game by any stretch of the imagination. We were all digesting the European Super League story anyway. But it's massive for Leicester City, their first FA Cup final since 1969. If he does leave, he could leave with a slice of history, Brendan Rodgers. It's remarkable, Gregor, what they've done there.
Absolutely, yeah. You're right, it wasn't a classic by any stretch of the imagination. But Leicester are kind of, I think this season they've been the most adaptable team in the league. They've had to deal with a lot of injuries. You know, the emergence of, when Vardy was out, the emergence of Iheanacho, and now the two of them are playing up front together. And although Vardy's not scoring, he's providing, you know, he created the goal. And the way they, you know, that back three as well is one of the best in the league, undoubtedly. And, you know, Fofana's going to be highly sought after, I believe. Soyuncu's been, you know, he stepped, when Maguire left, he stepped in. Johnny Evans was a £3 million signing from West Brom. They're one of the best run clubs in the country, undoubtedly. And, you know, undoubtedly as well, Brendan Rodgers, his kind of future, particularly if they were to win the FA Cup, that would be like, you know, if they won the FA Cup and got in the top four, what else does he do at Leicester? I think, you know, there could be a serious danger of him looking, you know, being more open to an approach from someone like Spurs in the future. So you've got to say that they're going to have a chance as well. They're very solid defensively, and they've always got a threat with Vardy and the form of Iheanacho at the moment. So I think it's got the makings of a really good final, actually.
Yeah, I think they'll be looking forward to it, and I think they'll be happier playing Chelsea than Manchester City. And I'll leave the final word on Manchester City to you, Alison Rudd. I'm not rubbing it in your face in particular. Just everyone that listens to the podcast will know that, as I pointed out in the very last episode, if you make as many as 8 changes like Pep Guardiola did at the weekend, you will disrupt your team's ability to keep winning matches, which for me is exactly why they were beaten by Chelsea at the weekend. What did you think of it?
I think maybe Thomas Tuchel listened to Yuhu because he seemed to know that those changes were coming and he prepared for them. Chelsea were as disciplined and as containedly energetic, if that can be such a thing, but that's what they are. You feel like they've got the full 90 minutes work rate in them, but they never sort of look like they've huffed and puffed through any period of that match. So they just sort of dominated City in terms of tempo of the game, controlled midfield. Kante was excellent. It was just a masterclass in guessing what would happen, that City would be slightly, just ever so slightly disjointed. And they were, and they just had fun exposing that. It was actually remarkably, and no one would have predicted it, it was actually quite a one-sided semi-final.
I thought there was echoes a little bit, sorry, of their defeat to Arsenal last season as well. You know, they were brave enough to kind of play through and on the counter. And in fact, it was often Kieran Tierney last season releasing Aubameyang I think that's where one of the goals came from. So also, if you're City now and you're looking who they're facing in 10 days in Paris Saint-Germain, and they're kind of suddenly that familiar weakness of the counter-attack has kind of been illuminated again. I think, is Pep now going to try and rethink what happens in the Champions League? It opens up all sorts of avenues. Who knows what's going to come?
Well, and also, I mean, if we're talking, you know, I mean, obviously it's they're not going to be winning a quadruple, and there's potential bigger ramification if De Bruyne's, you know, screwed for even one of those PSG games. I mean, he's their most important player, full stop. He's their best player. And if he's in jeopardy at all over for those matches, then that is a big deal.
Matt Dickinson, Alison Rudd, Gregor Robertson, thank you for being with me for the past hour or so, maybe a bit longer. Thank you so much. So much to talk about though today. We'll be back on Thursday as well. We'll see how Spurs get on in their next match against Southampton without Jose Mourinho. We'll look ahead to another big weekend as well, of course, with the EFL Cup final coming. Remember though, if you're enjoying the podcast, give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from, and make sure you're subscribed as well. You can subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times right now across all of your devices for more of our award-winning journalism. If you sign up today, you'll get 1 month free. Just go online, search thetimes.co.uk/thegame to get started. We will see you on Thursday.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.